WIRLP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, the City of Richmond's official emergency broadcast outlet, and Richmond's only, one and only, non-commercial, non-profit radio for the rest of us. So today on If Music Could Talk, we're going to feature an exclusive interview with Sinan Williams of Dengue Fever, the bassist of Dengue Fever, and you may know or may have heard that Dengue Fever is playing along with Chicha Libre, Biorritmo, Lauren Kendall, and one other guy that I'm forgetting right now. But there's information about that show and also about this particular broadcast on WRIR.org, so you can check there. And so we will start that interview pretty much right away. Dengue Fever is a group out of L.A. that features vocals by Chom Nimol, who is a very well-known Khmer vocalist who joined up with these guys to form Dengue Fever several years ago. So it's an interesting story about how they got together, and it's also an interesting story about the style of music they play, which is influenced by 60s and early 70s psych rock out of Cambodia, but fused with their own LA sound. So here's that track off of the brand new Dengue Fever album, Venus on Earth. And then there's also this new DVD-CD combo that's coming out, Sleepwalking Through the Mekong. So we'll start off with Oceans of Venus here on If Music Could Talk by Dengue Fever. We'll be right back.
Hello, is this Senon?
Yes, it is.
Hey, this is Carl. How you doing?
Good. How you doing, Carl?
Good, good. I'm calling you from Richmond here.
Yeah, I was expecting your call.
Great, great.
Yeah, how are you today?
I'm doing really good. Spring is definitely on the way.
Very nice. I'm sure spring and fall are your favorite time of the year.
Spring's definitely my favorite, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I used to live in New York, and I imagine the weather's not too much different there.
Where am I calling you now? You're in L.A.?
I live in L.A., yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you guys are playing here in Richmond on the 18th at a bowling alley, the Plaza Bowl Duckpin Bowling Alley.
Yeah, I heard that Duckpin is something unique, which have you ever been or seen it?
Yeah, it's a small little ball, about, you know, the size of a softball maybe.
And then small little people play it?
Well, I think that the pins are a little smaller, but they're always big, you know, just the same regular sized people. But
yeah, do you need little fingers to fit in the little holes that are in the little balls?
There's no holes. There's no holes. It's like throwing a grapefruit down a hall.
sounds like I'll play it at home when I get off the phone with you.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that you're playing in a bowling alley, and they've got the stage set up there, and I haven't seen a show there yet, but I imagine it probably ranks up there with some of your more interesting venues.
Yeah, I just hope that we're not playing on the bowling alley, and they are actually playing where we are playing, so that would be... to be hazardous to my feet.
Yeah, you'd have to do some funny dance steps to miss those balls. But maybe people will be mesmerized.
You know, we've played in the middle of a roller skating rink while we were being, while roller skaters were circling around us.
Oh, that's amazing.
That was interesting. I opted not to play on roller skates because I took a bad fall before the set. So I figure I'll just you wear my shoes for this one.
I hear roller skating's kind of making a comeback out there in L.A.
Well, you know, there's always been a couple of roller skating rinks that are still really fun to go to, and I actually go on occasion. One is the Moonlight Rollerway, and every Thursday, I mean, I haven't been in about a year, but every Thursday they have a live organist.
Oh, wow.
So that kind of makes it fun, and last time I was there, they had some people that were, like, really weird people that were just
on drugs,
pretty much on drugs and obsessed with roller skating.
Yeah,
like this one guy, like they have like, okay, everybody who knows the, you know, the Jersey double twist back shuffle on the floor, and everyone, like, I figured no one would know that. I just made that name up, but it was something like that.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, there's like, you know, like six people go out there and do some crazy roller skating maneuvers,
right, you know? In unison.
Yeah, in unison, and it's pretty wild.
Yeah. Well, I guess America is a place of diverse obsessions, and one thing, I guess the Khmer music, Cambodian music, there's a lot of Cambodian people living out there in California. Well, all over America, but especially in Long Beach, right?
Yeah, Long Beach is the largest populations of Cambodians outside of Cambodia.
Yeah. Yeah, and now you talk about roller skating. People obsessed with roller skating. There's people out there that are really getting pretty into the Cambodian sound, especially of the '60s.
You know, someone was like going to Cambodia, like, hey man, where I'm going to Phnom Penh, where can I hear the good music? And I'm like, well, I don't know if you're going to find good music, but you're going to find a lot of interesting clubs. I mean, like, you can't really, it's not a scene there for, like, you know, trying to track down some rare sound. It's more like, you know, you go in and there's some synth pop band playing and some weird dancers, and you know, it's definitely strange, but you're not going to be going and digging up something that you know is a lot easier to find in Long Beach. The funny thing is, when we were in Cambodia, I searched for music, you know, like I told this guy, I was like, I went to a music store, I'm looking for vinyl. Is there any old vinyl anywhere that you know of? And the guy said, oh, I know. We went outside. He's like, I know a place. Can you pay for the moto taxi, right? So the two of us get on a moto taxi. And in Cambodia, up to six people ride on one little scooter. So there's three of us on this little scooter. He leads the way, and we find our way to this little antique shop, like about a half mile away, and he takes me to the back, and there's this old phonograph player, and on the phonograph player is like a 78 of like some old classical music, like from the 30s.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I thought I was just cracked me up because we went through this whole like thing that took like an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And he led me to one vinyl that was like something, you know, just some classical music.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
Myself. All the CDs in Cambodia when we looked for music were all from Long Beach. Like everything they're selling in, other than the straight up bootlegs that they just duped themselves, but any like Cambodian music you find in Cambodia has been shipped there from Long Beach.
Do you feel, you know, with all the tragedy and the tumultuous history, I mean, all the artists and the musicians and the teachers and people, innocent people who were just killed during that time, do you think that in a way that makes the existence of dengue fever somehow a little bit more important or just, you know, do you feel like you're reviving a sound that was just only starting to blossom when it got cut short and it's something that needs to be continued at this point?
Well, you know, when we first started looking for a Cambodian singer and wanted to play this music, we knew a bit of the history, but not nearly as much as we know now.
Yeah.
And our original intention was just to, you know, we were kind of burnt out on the indie rock scene that we were in, and we just kind of wanted to try something that was just more fun and just completely different.
Yeah.
And so the inspiration was coming from a completely different place. It was coming from, like, experimentation and fun and, you know, excitement. It wasn't coming from, you know, we got to preserve this music or, you know, it wasn't like an academic thought. It was more of like an enjoyment and celebration of life kind of a place. And so I don't think we came from that place. I think it's kind of it's become important and it's become part of what we do, but it wasn't intentional. I mean, you know, from our music, we're not, you know, carbon copying or we're not trying to stay true to anything. We're just trying to experiment and have fun, but we can't help it because Nimal is our singer and she has such deep roots in Cambodia, and she, you know, I mean, to this day she lives in Long Beach, where when she's not with us she's not speaking English at all. She's been in this country for I think 7 years now and she still barely speaks English. It's like, just because she's so deeply rooted in the Cambodian community, you know, and also we play music for the Cambodian community, that it just kind of has become we've become appreciated by the Cambodian community because we are carrying on a tradition. And, like, our new music is being lumped in, you know, as Cambodian music just as much as the cover songs that we play.
Yeah, so by default, you're bringing some respect to that tradition, yeah. Even without intending to do it intellectually or that way.
Yeah, and I think even a lot of the Cambodian Americans are the older Cambodian Americans are especially proud of us because they are showing their children that it's cool to be Cambodian and it's cool to play Khmer rock and stuff like that. Because, like, a lot of older folks that come to our shows are always saying, you know, always proud of themselves for turning their kid onto us. And then their kid saying, wait, this is actually cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of the older folks have been giving us lots of props for, like, you know, kind of instead of, you know, Americanizing Nimal, she's been able to Cambodianize us.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's so. We'll be right back. and a lot of other stuff. I mean, we're getting calls by universities, aid organizations, and, you know, all kinds of stuff that, you know, I never even thought, you know, that, like I said, that wasn't even, you know, an idea in my mind when this all started out that, you know, some aid organization says, hey, maybe we can collaborate.
You know? Yeah, you guys work with several different charitable organizations.
We're working with two now. One is called Golden West, which is removing landmines from Cambodia, which is still is a ton left over from the Pol Pot area as well as from the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
People are still getting messed up by those things out in the countryside. I mean, you know, you go out in some rural area, you want to stick to the paths, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've heard that.
And
that's
also
serious.
We're working with Wildlife Alliance, which is creating national parks in Cambodia and trying to maintain and actually replenish a lot of the land that has been, you know, destroyed by, you know, just overuse and a lot of, and they're creating jobs for, you know, a lot of folks in Cambodia and economies wherever they're kind of popping up, and they're doing that all over Southeast Asia.
Yeah,
so it's a pretty awesome thing. You know, stop poaching,
right?
You know, legal poaching and all kinds of stuff. Have you seen our film?
I haven't, and I was going to ask you about that too.
Well, there's a part at the end of the movie. Our sax player, you don't really. Oh, and actually, in the middle of the movie as well, there's this kind of. Really kind of a dream sequence that kind of had some footage of this temple we went to called Phnom Chisor, and it's like it was built at the same time as Angkor Wat, and it's completely like up, like, you know, like 100 kilometers of dirt road, and it, you know, it's like a 200 step walk up to the plateau where the temple is, and it's, you know, it's like really just out in the boonies and rarely visited. And we went up there, I mean, there's guys hanging out and there's monks that actually still live there and pray there and stuff, worship at this temple.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, we're walking up there, and someone went up to a monk, went up to our sax player, and was like, "Dengue fever? Like, hey, you dengue fever?" we're like in the middle of nowhere, and you know, David's like, "Yes."
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, monks, you know, monks keep in touch with that stuff, you know, through
yeah.
different
well,
means.
You know, like, if you got a TV, you got a radio.
Yeah.
You may have heard of us in Cambodia because I think we made a splash when we visited there.
For people listening, dengue fever was formed in 2001 by Ethan Holtzman and his brother Zach,
mm-hmm.
right? And that was inspired by the trip to Cambodia that Ethan originally took. How did he end up there originally? Just was it a vacation or?
I think he ended up there kind of like I ended up there because, you know, I traveled there in 95 and Ethan was there in 98, I believe. And it just, you know, when you're traveling around Southeast Asia, at least when I was there, I was kind of just trying to find something far from home.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of explore and experience and,
yeah, see the world.
Yeah, and I was in Thailand on Koh Phangan Island, and, I was, like, having, like, some fruit smoothie on the beach in a hut, and I was like, you know, I could be in Mexico if I, you know, which is a couple hundred miles, less than a couple hundred miles from my house, and be in a cabana, you know, drinking a fruit smoothie at the beach, you know. So I was like, you know, I kind of want to experience more of the culture, you know. And I,
yeah.
I felt like, you know, in certain parts of Thailand, you can get the culture, but in a lot of it, they're really geared up for tourism.
Yeah.
So on a whim, I went to Cambodia.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Ethan was kind of doing, the same thing, just kind of, you know, tripping around and exploring. But once you get to Cambodia, it's a whole different feeling because the people there are really warm, just by nature. Just feels, you know, and they're more curious than they are anything else. Mm. You know, so going there, you're not instantly clumped in with, you know, the tourist cattle.
Right.
You know, you're like an individual that is sparking curiosity. Like, why are you here? You know, and tourism is just starting to pick up there now. So
yeah,
the time that me and Ethan were there, it was a lot more. Just, you know, I mean, to this day, I mean, we visited just a few years ago to make the film, Sleepwalking Through the Mekong, and people were just as warm as they were in 95, you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, it's a feeling that I got in Cambodia I didn't get anywhere else, you know, in the region.
Yeah. Other members of this group, how did they link up with you? Did you guys all know each other before you met Chom Nimal?
Yeah, Chom Nimal. Yeah, we met. I met Zach. You know, we were in kids going to college together when I met Zach.
Okay.
We've been friends, and you know, we've always been. You know, Zach used to be in Dieselhead, and I used to be in a band called the Radar Brothers.
Right.
And we would play shows together, bump into each other on the road, and you know, and we've always been friends throughout the years, and that's how I got involved in the project. Paul and Ethan, Paul is our drummer, have been friends since childhood. And David, our sax player, we were actually playing our first show, and you know, and David knew, you know, David was friends of ours already, and he was coming from a gig, and he never leaves his horn in the car, you know.
Yeah.
So he had his horn on his back, and he was in the in the audience, and we were like, David, come up, you know, roll a number with us, you know.
Yeah.
And he just hopped up on stage, and that was our first show, and he's been there ever since, you know.
Yeah. So. That's great.
So that's kind of how David kind of, he's kind of still the same way. You know, he kind of pops in and out whenever he wants, you know.
Yeah. And probably while you're working on the record, too.
Yeah. We have our own studio, and we do a lot of recording. It's over, you know, I have a studio back here in the back of my house, and we do a lot of recording over here. So we're able to, like, you know, sometimes it's, you know, anywhere between one and all of us working together.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And then... Chom Nimal, what was she doing in Long Beach before she met you guys? I mean, was she was singing or working?
She's actually still doing it. What she does is she sings at supper clubs, weddings, banquets, you know, Cambodian New Year's, you know. She's just, she knows, she probably has a repertoire of, you know, who knows, probably 300, you know, Cambodian songs, you know, from... you know, synth pop to traditionals.
Yeah.
So she is just like a, you know, basically a professional singer. And so there's these supper clubs that are all in Long Beach, and they have virtually the exact same supper clubs in Cambodia, you know,
uh-huh.
where it's just kind of gaudy decor, and you roll in, there's a band set up, and you just sit at a table, bottle of Johnny Walker goes down, you know, a bottle of Coke goes down, and just boatload of fish and noodles come flying out. And, you know, as you're grubbing and eating, you know, a song comes up you like, you jump up and you do a quick dance and you sit back down and eat some more and you jump up and, you know, and so she still is doing this. And that's where Zach and Ethan in Long Beach went to scout several different clubs down there.
Yeah.
To look for a singer. And they, you know, they asked a bunch of singers to come and to rehearsal. And the first one that we did, Nimal didn't show up, and just some singers that were just kind of not really great or didn't really, you know, we didn't find anything special, so we were kind of deflated after the first rehearsal.
Yeah.
You know, we're, this is like a lot of effort and a crazy idea, and who knows if this will ever come to fruition. A bunch of indie rockers going down to Long Beach trying to find a Cambodian starlet, you know. At the time, it seemed all fun and natural, but in retrospect, it seems a little like, you know, what were we thinking?
Right, nuts.
You know what I mean? Like, why would anybody, you know, want to come and play with us? You know what I mean? Why would, you know, what do we have to offer that a Cambodian singer would want to join, you know, some smoke-filled, dank, graffitied club? She thought we were crazy. She thought we were completely nuts. She didn't speak any English at all. So, like, through a translator, Zach and Ethan were explaining to her and then gave her a tape of some of the old Cambodian tunes we wanted to play.
Yeah.
And basically, if you were to ask Nimal now, you know, she wasn't so sure, but she asked her older sister, who is a, you know, I don't know if you know, but Nimal and her older sister Charvin and her brother Chom Bunyong are all famous singers in Cambodia. So she asked her older sister Charvin, like, you know, look at these crazy, you know, American guys want me to come try singing their band. And Charvin just said, you know, it couldn't hurt. Why don't you just try it, you know? And so, sure enough, the second rehearsal, she showed up along with her entourage because, you know, she like, rolled in with, like, you know, like her sister, about four other friends, you know?
And, right, to check things out.
Yeah, exactly. She needed some backup,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And she sang the first number, and it was just, like, you know, I mean, it was heart-stopping.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, like, just miles beyond the other ladies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, you know? And the other ladies first of all, the other ladies convinced us Nimal was not going to show up.
Right.
They were like, sorry, she ain't coming. And So we were kind of, you know, bummed that she wasn't going to come.
She had a rep already, just even not even in Long Beach, but in Cambodia.
Long Beach and Cambodia. I mean, but Long Beach and Cambodia are kind of like connected by a lifeline.
Right.
There's always Cambodians going to Cambodia, always them coming to Long Beach. You know, they both have CTN, which is Cambodian Television Network, which mm-hmm. is a big Cambodian station. So it's kind of like they're in different places, but they're very close to one another. So basically, she started singing, and we were just like, well, this is our singer. And at the time, we had no idea that she came from a famous family,
yeah.
that she was famous. You know, we just knew that she sang at the Dragon House. That's all we knew.
Right.
And then we had a gig, like, you know, about a month later, you know, we got a short set together, and it was off the hook. People went crazy. Spaceland, like this little, you know, this little indie rock club in L.A., and it was just, like, instant. It was just instantaneous.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's very exciting for her, too, because she just thought she was just going to be a supper club singer for the rest of her life.
It had a totally different energy.
Yeah, completely.
And then that first album, just self-titled Dengue Fever, tell me about the making of that album.
The first album is, I think, like 10 of the 60s covers and then two original songs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting, that album, because we, from the very get-go, intended on being a band that writes original music. That was where we came from. And that's what we were planning to do with Nimal, like, immediately. We were just playing these old numbers just so we can get an idea of what we kind of wanted to do, and then from there we would kind of start. You know what I mean? Like, that was like
yeah.
a starting point.
You're talking about artists like Sin Sitmout, Ross Seri Sotia, and Pan Ron, people like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Those are Ross Seri Sotia, Sin Sitmout. Sin Sitmout was the main songwriter. I mean, from the director of our film, John Perazzi, was saying that he wrote some ridiculous amount of songs, like
right.
the thousands.
Like Duke Ellington.
yeah, like this guy was insanely prolific for such a short time. I mean, the guy was probably writing three numbers a day or something ridiculous.
Yeah, know? And singing them.
Yeah, and singing them, and having every other Cambodian artist sing his songs.
Yeah.
So he was like the man, and he was really an amazing songwriter.
Here off of like just a way off the main drag here in Richmond on the south of the river down here where I used to go. I just passed by this place, go in. This was stuff that was actually ending up on the radio eventually. And
oh, nice.
But this was even before, way before I had a radio show. I used to go in there. I bought like coconut juice and like, you know, mango cubes and stuff. But
yeah, nice.
But then I would, you know, I found this lady had this like notebook of cassette covers, and then she had the tapes all behind the counter, and I bought like three of them. You know, I was like, what should I buy? She was like, I don't know. Take these, you know.
Yeah.
And these, like, I think I ended up with one Sin Sitamote classics tape, and then I got this wedding music that just totally blew my mind. The wedding music, like, with that really reminds me of the, like, Sleepwalking Through the Mekong, the song, that kind of more, like, flowing.
Well, that's what Nimal's parents were, wedding singers, and they were also, because, like, wedding singing is like a style, and they were also comedy. They also did comedy singing
right.
as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So her family, her parents were even, you know, her parents were performers. You know?
Wow. So, okay, so back to that album. Sorry.
Okay, so, you know, our intent was never to record these old 60s songs. Our intent was to use these as the springboard for our new band. You know what I mean? That was the idea.
Right.
But it was proved to be really difficult writing with Nimal initially because she had never been in a band that played original music.
Right.
She'd only been in bands that, like, I mean, she probably had this repertoire of 300 songs by the time she was, you know, 16.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So beyond that, she kind of stopped. She was, you know, and so when we were like, hey, check out this jam, she'd sit there quiet. We'd be like, hey, just like, you know, Zach would kind of sing kind of a half melody, kind of like, you know, something like this, and then maybe you could just, you know, take it from there.
Right.
And in the beginning, you know, with the language problems, I mean, we use translators and stuff to speak with one another and all that stuff. It just wasn't happening. So we were like, you know what, let's just like, you know, like the Stones or the Beatles did, let's just like put out this record of covers. This is like, you know, we did all this work to get to this point. Let's just do these songs.
Yeah.
You know, we're playing these live because it's like all we got right now, you know. So let's just make an album. And then from here, we'll start working in the originals. And we're working a couple originals on this album. And then next album is going to be all originals. And that was like, that was the idea of the first record, was to kind of put those behind us. So we could go to the future.
Yeah.
You know? And so well, that's what we did.
I would imagine that period of time, that album, that was a really important, that was like the transition period where you guys were, you know, just getting to know each other, get your chops and feel comfortable with each other. I mean, you got five American guys and a charismatic Cambodian woman, and there's a language barrier there, and, you know, so after that album, you progress.
For the first year of her coming to rehearsals, she came with, like, no less than three or four people. It was like, it was literally like, we're like, when are you going to lose your bouncers? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But eventually, I mean, like we are now, I mean, we're just total family. I mean, she lives in Long Beach, but we rehearse a lot and we record a lot in L.A., so it's not that far, but, you know, if you're, like, in the studio until, you know, after midnight, it's kind of hard to drive home and come back the next day.
Yeah.
So she has a room at Zach and Ethan's house, so she could chill, and she's got all her stuff, you know, a little dresser, so she's got a little spot, you know, here too, with us, you know. Yeah,
but,
so we're family now.
It took a little while to get to that point, and by the second album, would you say you guys were there? I mean, Escape from Dragon House.
Yeah, the second album is, I mean, a lot of experimentation went on in the studio and with each other and everything on that album. Yeah, because there's one, I mean, we did one cover on that album, and then I think, I don't know, 10 or 11 original tracks. And so...
And which was the cover on that one?
Tip My Canoe.
Okay.
Was the cover on that album. But the rest are original tracks. And that's, yeah, that was just a lot of fun, a lot of experimentation, a lot of writing in the studio.
Yeah.
It was good. And you know, to see Nimal down on her hands and knees working on lyrics, or, like, fixing the translations that we would have done. Because, like, Zach would write lyrics, and we'd send him to Washington, D.C. to someone we met online who was a musician who would translate from English to Khmer.
Yeah.
But the funny thing was is that, I mean, he was, I think, our second or third translator, because it's kind of tricky to translate songs, because we would say something like, you know, I got to walk down the street would be like a word or whatever, a sentence. And in Khmer, you know, I want to walk down the street is about 10 times as many syllables.
Yeah,
you know? So
yeah.
Fitting it all into songs was a whole different thing we hadn't anticipated. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So after a while, we're like, okay, let's just get the melodies down, and then let's write some frameworks for songs, and then just give them the translator, you know, and then, you know, we just have to think of creative ways to work on songs. And then Nimal would get it back saying, oh, this doesn't make any sense. And
yeah,
she'd
yeah.
She'd all set, and then next thing you know, she'd be like, you know, truncating everything. So some, you know, we don't even know what our songs ended up being. You know, we know what they are in English initially.
Yeah.
But then after they get go through this whole, like, washing machine of translation, you know, who knows what they, you know.
But she's going through them and sort of rewriting them a little bit, too, so that she feels comfortable.
Yeah, yeah, she has to, so she could sing them.
Yeah.
I mean, same with melodies. Like, we'll come up with melodies, and then we just know by the nature of Nimal and her culture and her upbringing and then her style of singing,
yeah,
that she just takes those melodies and she just bends them to her will, into like into her style, into her way, you know what I
yeah
mean?
So many nuances in everything she does. Every note is just,
yeah, well, she sings in that microtonal way where it's like a stringless instrument,
yeah,
you know what I mean? She just kind of just bends her way through notes and melodies and in warbles. And
yeah.
She also does this thing in what they call in Cambodian ghost voice, which is similar to our yodeling, where you're in one register and then your voice cracks and it shoots up an octave.
Oh, wow.
And so she does a lot of, I mean, that's just, you know, it's kind of built into her style of singing, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That the song on Escape from Dragon House, Snaibong, that's a love song. Snaibong is, what does that mean?
Snaibong means I love you or
okay.
I like you.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, the basic thing of the story is it's about a very outgoing woman and a very shy man, and her basically prodding him like, "Why don't you, you know, come dance with me? Why don't you come hang out? Why are you always sitting around? And why are you calling me? Why are you?" And it's not that he doesn't love her; it's just that he doesn't have the, you know, enough nerve to show his love. You know.
Yeah, and that song starts out with that bass line. Which is really awesome. I mean, that's yours.
That's mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that song, yeah.
Yeah.
course, you know, Escape from Dragon House, the title cut. What's going on there?
Well, we named it after the fact that Dragon House was her job, and basically her job used to, basically we didn't have Fridays or Saturdays.
Right.
And that's like the best night to play gigs.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically, Dragon House would be like, you could have New Mall any night of the week except Friday or Saturday. except Friday or Saturday. We're like, that's when we want to play the gigs. That's when we play the shows.
Yeah.
And so the song is about a woman who has to go through many, many different jobs.
You know?
And it's mainly because, like, some jerk is coming on to her, and she's like, you know, I can't be your nanny anymore because, you know, the husband's coming on to her, or she's working in the kitchen, and the chef gets fresh or something, and that's what the song's about, you know, about a woman just kind of lost and, you know, never really able to set up a home anywhere. You know, she's always getting forced into something new.
So there's some of her perspective in here too, like,
yeah,
or at least
I mean,
through.
That's what's nice about Zach's writing a lot is that it's, you know, he likes to take on little stories, little things, and we have Nimal singing, so it's, I think naturally it's inspiration for Zach to write from a woman's perspective or from Nimal's perspective, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Nimal's able to kind of like, you know, I mean, Nimal writes some lyrics too, but Zach definitely writes the lion's share.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, when Nimal feels something, I mean, you know, when we're writing, if she doesn't feel something for the song or if it doesn't make sense to her, she gets real upset and she doesn't want to sing it. So it's like, we're like, well, if it doesn't make sense to you, why don't you figure out a way to put in a word or some things that do make sense to you, because you know she wants to feel connected to the music, you know.
Yeah, an emotional connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so Escape from Dragon House, we named the song that, but we named the album that because finally we were able to win over some Fridays and Saturdays.
Yeah.
Took a while.
Yeah. Something else that's special about that date, right? That's the first day of the Khmer New Year, right?
Oh, yeah, it is. It's the Khmer New Year. Yeah, 13, 14, 15, I think. One of those is the exact date. It's probably the 14th, but they celebrate 3 days.
3 days.
Yeah.
And it starts on the eve of the 13th, according to one source that I looked up.
Oh, that sounds about right. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want, Nimal is always performing, usually in Long Beach, on those 3 days.
Yeah.
And she's like always like, she loves Cambodian New Year, but at the same time she's like, I sing 9 a.m, at noon, at 2, at 4, at 6. It's like, you know, when we play a gig, it's like 1 45-minute set.
Right.
When she plays an event, it's like some 8-hour event, you know.
Yeah, well, they there's a Khmer community here in Richmond,
and
through the years they've had New Year celebrations out sort of on the same side of town as where I found that market. But at the end of the night there's always a dance band, like actual live instruments, which is the best part. But I don't know if they're doing that this year. That's awesome that you're releasing that DVD and CD on April 14th, because it's really serendipitous.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
You're listening to Musical Talk on WRIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. And here's a track off of that new CD-DVD combination, Sleepwalking Through the Mekong. That is coming out on April 14th, as you heard. And this is the track called New Year's Eve, sung by the legendary Sin Sitamut and Ross Saray Sotia. I guess Khmer New Year is coming up next week, so this is an appropriate song. Yeah, that's Sin Sitamuth and Rossare Sotia, New Year's Eve, from Dengue Fever's forthcoming DVD-CD set, Sleepwalking Through the Mekong. Before that, we heard Escape from Dragon House from the same titled CD, their second album, Dengue Fever, Escape from Dragon House, title cut. And we also heard Snai Bong off of that album. And you've been listening to an exclusive interview with Thenan Williams of Dengue Fever. And we're going to hear the second half of that interview very soon. But first, I'm going to play you a little bit of that Khmer wedding music that we were talking about, which is more of a different traditional style, Khmer music style. And this is a really beautiful cut from the Khmer Rocks label out of Southern California. It was released in 2003 in Richmond, California. So here it is. Here's some wedding music for you. Talk on WRIR. It's almost 8 o'clock, and I want to thank you for listening so far, and we'll hear the second half of the interview with Sinan Williams of Dengue Fever coming up very shortly. So thank you for staying tuned to Richmond's independent radio here.
Can you tell me about what it was like to go over there as a group? I mean, you guys all went there, right?
Yeah, we went there to play music and to make a film.
Yeah, and yeah. Did you get the grand tour? I mean,
it was one of the most amazing trips of my life. You know, because you know, traveling is one thing, but then traveling with a purpose is a whole different thing. And also, the anticipation of our arrival, I was unaware of until I arrived there. You know, and felt it. You know, and the first day that we arrived, went to the hotel, whatever, chilled out. Probably, you know. I think I went over to a friend of a friend's cantina. He opened up this, I guess, you know, basically restaurant and bar.
Yeah.
And then the very next morning we woke up and we went and did a 2-hour special on Cambodian television network.
Oh, wow.
And it's like the biggest, you know, broadcast station in Cambodia.
Wow.
And so we played 10 songs, interviewed between every two songs, and...
And this time, Nimal was your interpreter, right?
Oh, yeah. Straight up, you know. You know, amazingly, the host of the show spoke English better than Nimal did, so we didn't even need her to translate.
Okay.
Pretty wild. It was, but it was, you know, full variety show. There was a comedy act and us that was on.
Wow.
And they knew we were going to be there for a month, and so they aired the program 2 to 3 times a day for a month. So it was pretty wild. It was. Then they gave us this beautiful gift, and then when Nimal saw it, she was like blown away because it was green jade.
Oh,
and
man.
That is like the highest honor. And she was talking about some government official who was on CTN a week earlier, and he only got blue jade. Really,
that's
a high
huge
honor.
Yeah.
Yeah, this beautiful statuette, and you know, this giant stone thing. You know, it was beautiful. Our drummer, I was over at my drummer's house the other day, and I just noticed it. I couldn't believe I didn't notice it before. It was up on his shelf. I was like, ah, so you're the one who got that. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know where it went. You
yeah.
know? But so basically everybody, all the way to like the small, because later we traveled into the smallest tiny little villages.
Mm-hmm.
And in these little villages, you'd see little shacks, lean-tos with a TV on and like a fluorescent lamp and a guy with like a cart and a generator would go around charging up all the batteries in town.
Wow, wow.
So we'd be in this little tiny village with like one little dirt road, and I'd walk down the street and they'd be like, Dengue Fever, CTN!
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They'd know me. So it was pretty, that was pretty shocking. That was pretty amazing that like just this one, you know, this TV show just totally spread the word about us all across the country, and everyone already knew about Nimal. So pretty, we kind of made quite a splash, you know. When we
yeah.
first showed up, it was playing on CTN was a big deal, and we also did a few other radio stations as well. But
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, we were definitely welcomed with open arms. I mean, there was, you know, we also recorded with master musicians, which was amazing. We found a studio that we, a studio that we rented, and you know, hook up with this organization called Cambodia Living Arts, which is an aid program, you know, that is funded by, you know, donations from around the world. And our friend Dickon hooked us up with all these master musicians who we collaborated with at a music studio in Phnom Penh, and that was a lot of fun.
What sort of instruments were they playing?
We had Kong Nai played the chapai, which is kind of a three-stringed guitar, kind of an instrument.
Yeah,
it's real long, and it's got like it's like wood, and it's somewhere between a lute and a guitar and a banjo kind of a thing.
Right.
And we also played with a woman named Tep. It's a Tep Marie who played this rionit instrument, which is a kind of a marimba, wooden, kind of shaped like a boat.
Oh, wow.
Kind of an instrument. And
yeah.
And he played with this Sok Duch, and he plays this thing called he plays the tro, which is like a violin kind of an instrument.
Oh, yeah.
And then he plays this other instrument, which the translation is the heart instrument.
Oh, wow.
Because it's this gourd that you use against your chest, and your body is the actual thing that makes the resonance.
Wow.
And then you move this gourd up and down, and it creates kind of a wah-wah effect.
Wow.
And then he play harmonics on the string, so it's kind of a pretty cool instrument. So he played the tro in that instrument. Instruments, and one that she played, which blew me away, was this was just, it was an ox horn.
Uh-huh.
And she basically said it was basically the, you know, like a, you know, a thousand-year-old cell phone, because these hunters would go out. So it was, she kind of made a joke saying this was the old cell phone.
Yeah.
Would communicate, you know. Yeah.
So you spent a couple of days doing different little sessions featuring those musicians, and is some of that going to end up on the DVD or?
Yeah, we have like, I think it's like about four of the collaborations we did, and I think some solo work that they did too while we were there in Cambodia.
Yeah.
On the soundtrack for the film.
Yeah.
Along with some of the golden oldies, and some of the original music that we wrote for the soundtrack to the film, and then some of the couple live tracks, and then a couple of tracks off of our album.
Yeah.
Our old albums are on there. It's a really nice, we were really, you know, we spent a lot of work on the soundtrack, because we didn't want it to be like some laborious piece of music. We wanted it to be a cohesive album, so we really spent a lot of time making the soundtrack sound really nice and flow.
Am I correct in thinking that it's probably a little bit more of a collage than a documentary, or?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. It's definitely a collage, but, you know, there's substance in it, you know. It's like vignettes to me.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like little vignettes, but there's a common thread in it. Yeah, the movie turned out beautiful. It just flows, and it's like a... Yeah, it was a lot of work making a picture. Making an album is hard, but making a film is a lot of work goes into that, man.
Yeah,
definitely have respect for filmmakers. Put it that way now.
Well, who is the filmmaker for this?
John Perazzi was the director of the film.
Uh huh.
An amazing job, and the band, we all just, I mean, we spent hours and hours and hours in the editing studio with John.
Yeah.
Hours making the soundtrack, hours, you know, trying to get raising money, and hours trying to, you know, work in the art and the graphic art and everything. I mean, it's just such a, there's so much involved in making a film. It's wild just to kind of get this little piece of plastic that's what it is, you know what I mean?
You're doing screenings of that already, or at least very soon. I see you've got one coming up in L.A. at Amoeba, right?
Yeah, we got one. Amoeba has a theater space here. And
did you also do one at Knitting Factory? I saw there was a Khmer music night thing that.
Yeah, we did a screening at the Knitting Factory. But some of the most amazing screenings. One was at the Margaret Mead Film Festival in Natural History Museum in New York.
Oh yeah,
which was pretty incredible screening.
Yeah,
there was also. We've been to the San Francisco International Film Festival, the Chicago International Film Festival. It's been to Bangkok. It's been to Cambodia. Been to Thailand. Been to Taipei.
Wow.
Been to Denver. It's getting ready to screen in, I believe, in Miami, and another international film festival in Chicago. So it's been, got screened at the Egyptian Theater in Los Angeles. So it's been, it's been having a really successful screening run for about a year and a half.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, I can't wait to see it. I mean, it hasn't even come out. All these people have seen it already.
And so we're gonna have it with us when we come through.
Were there places you were able to go because of Nimal and other Khmer friends that you have that you wouldn't necessarily have been able or known about to go otherwise?
Yeah. I mean, two things that come to my mind immediately is we had a beautiful dinner with Nimal's family, and it was just really special. I mean, we got our little private room in this really nice restaurant that they suggested, and just, you know, hung out with her sister, her two brothers, her mother, and her cousin, and we just had this beautiful dinner. You know, it's just with all, you know, they did all the ordering, so we just, like, you know, some of the food was, you know, I did, you know, I tasted, but was a little bit like, what's this? You know, I have some serious traditional action going on with the meal.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just a really beautiful dinner. So that was something that, you know, I felt special being able to be there for that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was a really, just really a nice feeling. And
And that warmth and the welcome that you were talking about earlier really came across with her family,
yeah.
too.
And then when we were leaving, we did like a, must have been 30, 45-minute photo session with all the staff, the owner of the restaurant. The owner of the restaurant was bringing out some crazy food for us.
Yeah.
And then we did this photo session with, like, the whole staff. I mean, the kitchen came out. I mean, all the waiting staff. It was like, we were like, we were taking more pictures than we did dinner. Like, the photo session lasted longer, you know?
Yeah.
But it was a really nice, that was really nice. And then another thing was we rehearsed and performed with these kids who are studying at this school in the ghetto in Phnom Penh, and they're part of this organization called Cambodia Living Arts.
Right.
The same folks that hooked us up with the master musicians hooked us up with these kids and this school that is in this, like, gutted old building, which I've heard now has been torn down. It was this gutted old building where people lived and, you know, cooking in the hallways and within this, like, completely, like, the most, you know, the poorest place I'd ever been, you know.
Yeah.
Was this little school that took up like four rooms inside of this building, and it was these amazing kids and amazing teachers, and they were such amazing artists. I mean, they're dancing, and they were all playing traditional music, and singing was just stunningly beautiful. And
yeah.
To sit there in this room with these kids and have them perform for us, and then immediately afterwards, us perform with them and for them. And then later that night, we performed all together on this stage that we organized to get set up in the shanty town in Tolny Basak district, Phnom Penh, which is, you know, again, like, you know, pretty amazing. Because while we were in Phnom Penh, there was places that, you know, we played in some, like, you know, expat bars where Cambodians had never been. But on the constituency of us performing anywhere was that it was free and that everybody can come.
Yeah.
So here we are in this bar with all these Cambodians hanging out, and the whole outside just as packed as the inside, and it's a mix of Westerner and Cambodian folks, which just doesn't happen that much there, even though you're in Phnom Penh.
Yeah.
There's still that segregation that happens. And then here we are playing in the shanty town in Tolny Basak, where people who had lived, Westerners who had lived in Phnom Penh for years, wouldn't even dare to go.
Right.
And they came to see us play at that stage. So that was kind of special for me, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that performance in the Tolny Basak was one of the most wild shows I'd ever played.
What was the audience reaction? I mean, were they just quiet or were people
quiet.
Going crazy?
It was like,
yeah?
It was like stunned. It was like, I mean, literally these people had nothing and had no money and just, I mean, it was, you know, just, it was, it's hard to explain. But,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was really just gnarly, you know. And
yeah.
There I was, you know, with my bass and my guitar. And then, you know, Nimal had never even been to this neighborhood. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And there we are, you know, performing. It was pretty remarkable. But the thing was, everyone was looking at us stunned. There was kids laughing, kids playing. Kind of the teenagers were kind of clapping and kind of getting into it. And the older folks were just like, totally staring. And then, like, when the show was over and we're getting off stage, it wasn't even after the song, it was like as we're getting off stage is when the roar, the applause came.
Yeah.
until the end to really give it.
Yeah, we were like, we'd end a song and be like, should we play another one? Let's play another one, you know, we played another one. And but we knew from what we saw and how many people came, I mean, there was no promotion other than the 5 hours it took to get the PA and get all this stuff going.
And the word of mouth from that.
Word of mouth, yeah, that's how we got, there must have been probably close to 2,000 people there. And that was just, that was wild.
So you're doing both. You're exposing people here in America to the Cambodian sounds. You're bringing sort of the Western, a little bit of the Western sound to Cambodia. You know, this is an important thing, exposing audiences to the other side of, you know, and all these different cultural sounds. The song Integratron, is that a play on words on the word integration?
No. No, that was it's funny you mentioned that, because somewhere in the cyber world, someone misspelt it as integration.
Oh, okay.
And we've been like seeing it printed up here and there on, like, we've just been seeing it here and there misspelled. Like, there was like someone put out a compilation with one of our songs and they put integration instead of Integratron. And,
yeah.
And it's Integratron.
Okay.
The song is based off of this, we made a video for Snibong, and in that video is this building that this man built out in the Joshua Tree Desert. And in the desert, some aliens came down to him and gave him plans to make this building. And it was this big dome out in the middle of the desert, and the whole dome has its pivots on its own axis on some casters, these big rollers. And it's all made of wood and non-metal materials, because the metal would mess up the transmission between Earth and these space beings. So in this building is where we shot that video. So while we were shooting that video, it was about the time we were kind of messing with this song, and this song and the lyrics kind of ended up getting influenced by, you know, aliens and extraterrestrials and communication and all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of where the name Venus on Earth comes from, because the Venusian aliens is kind of one of the main groups of aliens that is, you know, by all these, like, you know, extraterrestrial believers, which I am as well, kind of, that's one of the places that they feel like that, you know, some of these aliens had come from.
Yeah.
So the Venus on Earth is kind of, all, well, that's a play on words, because you could take Nimal, you know, Venus is the god of the sea, and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
As Nimal. But then also you could say Venus on Earth, meaning there's some aliens down here hanging out with us.
Yeah.
So that's where Integratron comes from. It comes from that building, which is called the Integratron, out in the desert.
That's pretty wild.
your phone card. This is like a long distance love song, and anyone who's ever had a long distance relationship can relate, you know. But but also, you know, Nimal in particular, dealing with traveling the world as a musician, just as you guys do. I would imagine she's probably bought a few phone cards to keep in touch with family back home, right?
Oh yeah, she's well, here in LA, it's the Tiger phone card that you buy to call Cambodia.
That's the one.
That's the one. Yeah, I don't know. Do you have the Tiger phone card there?
I've never had to call Cambodia, but
well, that's the one you buy here. If you want to call Cambodia, you go get yourself a Tiger phone card.
Yeah. Okay.
And but the story is actually between our director of our film, Sleepwalking Through the Mekong, and his love.
Okay.
And that's the and his Cambodian love, because he fell in love in Cambodia.
Yeah.
And they actually called it quits after a while, and then we were playing a show in Montreal, Canada, and this in Montreal there's a huge Cambodian community in Montreal,
yeah,
Canada, and our director's girlfriend has family there, and so she managed to get to Montreal, and then there was a screening of our film in conjunction with our live performance in Montreal, and so our director came up to do a Q&A for the film from New York, and they rekindled their love.
Oh,
Montreal, and now they're getting married.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Isn't that nice?
That's really beautiful. And then I see this promo photo of Nimal standing in the phone booth with all you guys on the other side of the room. I just thought, like, there's got to be something to that Tiger phone card song.
Yeah. But yeah, she's definitely the one who coined Tiger phone card, though, because that's how. And she's brilliant, because I'll be out there trying to figure out how to call home and you know, figuring out the Skype, and then like the computer's down, or I can't get online, or something crazy, and then I look out the hotel window, and Nimal has her phone card. She's on the phone talking to whoever she needs to talk to.
Yeah,
I was like I've taken a few tips from her, man. Get the phone card when all else fails.
Yeah, and she knows which one to buy too.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one of those things, a long distance love. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
I've had it, and it's yeah.
You definitely need a good love song to get you through it. So.
Yeah.
You live in Phnom Penh.
You live in New York City.
But I think about you so, 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 so much I forget to leave.
It's 4 a.m. I check my email.
I'm too geared up to fall asleep.
So I write you back and count the days until
hotel room. I'm sitting on the hallway floor. I know that we are so, 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 so tired. My phone runs in the fire.
You only call me when you're drunk. I can tell it by your voice. It's the only time that you open up to me.
Yeah.
think this kind of thing, you know, you should do it in every province of Cambodia. Because it's psychologically healing. It's you know, we've been in a problem for a long time. This would happen, make us happy. It's good. It's good, you know.
It's really been great to talk to you.
Yeah.
So thank you, you know, first
You're
of
welcome.
All. Yeah. But with your search for the original musicians on some of these older songs that are part of the release of this Sleepwalking Through the Mekong, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're actually re-releasing some of these original songs on this particular CD, right?
Yes, we are. Yeah.
And as you explained earlier, it's just sort of who knows what to do about the licensing.
Well, I mean, even for artists that are alive, and we know that are alive, we can't even get, you know, no publishing companies or their songs aren't registered, you know, so it's very,
yeah,
you know, or contact is impossible, stuff
right.
like that. So
right.
it's, you know, we did a lot of research for our film and the music, and it's been difficult to give people, you know, monetary credit.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And, or even families of. And there was this thing that went around, I believe it was in the 80s, that was like an international copyright law.
Right, right.
And many countries signed it, and many countries didn't sign it. And so Cambodia was one of the countries that did not sign it. And thus, in an international market, it creates all of their music to be public domain.
Yeah.
Or traditional works of art.
Right.
So what we have done is we're allotting we're putting the portion of all publishing that we recover on their behalf into a fund, and then we're going to leave it there for a certain amount of time, and then we start allocating it to these Cambodian organizations that we've been supporting,
yeah,
and working with, because we haven't, you know, it's been a conundrum with our first record of how to, you know,
how to license that stuff.
Yeah, and how
yeah.
and how to give back, you know.
Yeah.
So now we're just kind of figuring out how to give back, and it's, you know, by working with these organizations that we are working with.
Well, I think that's a great solution. You know, if you put the money aside, at least it's there, you know, if
yeah.
they do contact you. And so
yeah.
I think the value of sharing this music with people, I mean, you're probably not going to make loads and loads of money off of those three songs, but people will be exposed to the depth of this Cambodian culture that, you know,
oh, yeah.
got basically purposely erased in some ways, or they tried to, and they couldn't
yeah.
because it survives.
Yeah, no, it's you know, I mean, we're all thankful that a lot of Cambodians got out of the country before. I mean, unfortunately, not all the Cambodians that were able to just flee the madness of the Khmer Rouge.
Yeah,
but a lot of the culture did survive, and actually in the film, Paul, our drummer, is talking about the heart instrument that I explained to you earlier. Mm-hmm. And there's, out of all of Cambodia, there's only one or two students of that instrument.
Wow.
You know, and so, and that is the only master musician alive that knows how to play that instrument.
Right.
So in our film is him playing a little bit, and then his, one of his students playing some. And that is just, you know, and actually through, I saw this small documentary while I was in Cambodia about this instrument it's a stringed instrument that's held between the teeth, and then somehow, I can't remember exactly, held with the feet and the teeth, and then it's like plucked or strummed, and it's this crazy instrument, and it was known to be extinct, and it was only found out about in some old hieroglyphic, some kind of temple carvings.
Yeah.
And then through research, they found some old person that was familiar with the instrument and actually knew how to play the thing.
Yeah.
And knew how to build it, and they actually made it, and then they funded that old person to teach some people. And so now there's some kids who play this instrument that was basically extinct.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of wild that, you know, that you know, things like that are allowed to become extinct. You know, it's kind of a bummer.
But they don't
happen in this country, you know. But
on certain levels, you know, you wonder if they will. But
yeah.
you know, there's always that oral tradition, and you know, and like that one drawing. I mean, it's like a seed being, you know, trapped in a pyramid for thousands of years. You can still plant it, and it'll grow again. You know,
exactly.
So you're going to be here on April 18th with Chicha Libre, also,
yep.
And we've seen them a couple times here already.
Should be a great show, and I think we're playing with a local band that's supposed to kick ass as well.
Hell yeah, Bio Ritmo.
Yeah,
Richmond's own.
Yeah, so it should be a really fun night. A lot of dancing, I'm imagining or predicting.
A lot of dancing, a lot of duck pin bowling.
Yeah, sounds good. Let's do some duck pin. And yeah, definitely introduce yourself for sure. I'd love to meet you in person.
Great talking to you, and thanks again for the interview. And I know listeners of With Music to Talk will really appreciate hearing everything you had to say also, so thanks a lot.
Very cool, man, and I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Okay, great.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Hello, this is Sinan from Dengue Fever, and you listen to WRIR, Richmond Independent Radio. It's the smoothest sound, especially when you're grooving with DJ Carlito. We'll be right back.
That was Lake Dolores from Dengue Fever's second LP CD, Escape from Dragon House. So thanks for listening, and special thanks to Sinan Williams for talking with us. And you're listening to WRAR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. Stay tuned for more groovy Khmer sounds.
ຈົ່ງໄວ້ນະມີເກດຕະຍຸດນະດອຍບານຈື່ງລົກຊັ້ນຊຽງນັ້ນມາໄດ້ຈຽງນະນະກາຄັນສາມາຕາວ່າສົມຈື່ງລົກວ່າສົມຈື່ງນະມີສໍາເລງປະຮູ້ມາຫາກາຄົນຂ້ອຍມີພອບມີປ្រេងມີສະມາອໍດາລາຈັ່ງສົມໄວຄຸມຫມູ່ຢູ່ເຈຍບາດແນ່ນະ
is WIR. Here's Khmer Sarin Tra. Have about 10 minutes left here, and those are some various tracks I accumulated over the years of just more modern pop out of Cambodia. That was Pich Chinda Kade Sneha, and we'll hear one called Psychic Teacher by Mies Sok Sorfir Krotai, and then probably finish off with Touch Sunix with a really cool kind of funny track. It's called Dip Dip Ui, which I guess she's saying, like, anytime I see you, I just go dip dip oi. You can actually see the translated version on YouTube. Just type in dip dip oi. And stay tuned for Can't Stop the Music. Thanks for listening tonight.
Oh, Long time. through.